This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
And welcome to When in Romance, Book Riot's podcast about romance novels and all of the various characters, pun intended, in that world. I am not Jess, I am Trisha, and I'm joined this week by a very special guest that I'll introduce in just a minute. Before I do that, I will tell you we are recording on Thursday, April 11th, 2024, and maybe for the first time in When in Romance history, you have two hosts, both in the same time zone, same Pacific time zone. Welcome to Vanessa Diaz, the managing editor of Book Riot. Hi, Vanessa.
Hey, Trisha. Yeah, we're not only in the same time zone, we are in the same like geographic region of the country.
We are. It's amazing.
A few hours away.
I know. One of these days, I'm going to hop on a train and go down to Portland and visit you.
I quite literally am taking time off soon, and I'm literally live breaking news. It's like, I'm going to maybe potentially head up Trisha if I end up going up to Washington on my time off.
So do it.
Here
yes.
we go.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe this is the first of many. We don't even have another podcast that we need to record, but maybe we'll just do one for
fun. I'm just going to jump on while you talk to Jess. You're just going to hear me Perfect. In the back. Like, I like that book too. And it's going to
exactly.
be great.
Exactly. I love it. Do you want to tell people a little bit about who you are and what your job is?
Yeah. So you've heard me one time before, I think, on the show. It was quite some time ago. But yeah, I'm the managing editor here at Book Riot. So I manage the editorial things. I oversee essentially everything we do on the site itself, you know, bookriot.com, on our newsletters and podcasts. It involves talking to both staff and contributors, but all the content we make, when we make it, how we make it, all that good stuff. So I kind of have my hands in all the pots that it take to run bookriot.com.
You are a very big deal, is basically the takeaway.
Thank you.
That's all people need to know. That is all people need to know. We are going to talk more about you and your life and your romance reading habits and, you know, whatnot in a minute. But before we do, Jess and I usually kick it off by talking about what we are currently reading. And if you are a special guest on When in Romance, you don't have to be reading romance. It can be any book that you are reading. So that is the question of the day, Vanessa. What are you reading?
I do love that caveat because sometimes you catch me off guard. But no, I'm actually reading one romance and one not romance. I had to start The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo. It is a like dark fantasy based in like Inquisition era Spain that I've been really excited to read. And that just came out, I believe, this week. So yeah, that's one, or last week. And then the second is one that we'll get into how this happened later, but I was reading one of our newsletters, editing it, and got a recommendation for a book called Aphrodite and the Duke by J.J. McAvoy, which is a Regency era second chance romance, a black romance, black straight characters that is to fill like the Bridgerton shaped hole in your heart is how it was pitched to me. That is exactly what it sounds like based on what I've read of it so far. So yeah, having a great time with both of those. They have not disappointed like 20% in.
Oh, that's always, oh, thank God. Although I almost think, and we can talk more about this later, I almost think it's worse when you get disappointed like 60% of the way in.
Oh, no, yeah. And we've all been at the like 90% point too, or like that. So yeah, I am deeply in a place of DNFing if something isn't working for me because life is just, you know, lifing.
Yeah.
But I so far was really pleased that both of these are living up to that hype. It's been good.
Hooray. So I have actually not started the book that I was going to mention yet. It just came out on Tuesday. It's a book called The Kiss Countdown by Etta Easton. I may have mentioned this when Jess and I were talking about books we were most anticipating for the year, because I have been hearing about this book for like a year. So it is about a event planner who is jobless, kind of going through it, having a little bit of a rough time. And then she convinces, sort of in the spur of the moment, an astronaut in Houston to be her fake boyfriend. And he has some strings. He needs her to stay with him. He is also trying to pretend he is in a relationship for some professional and family reasons. And like basically just the fact that there is an astronaut as one of the main characters in this book is wildly intriguing to me. It's kind of amazing that that doesn't happen more when you think about it. Because
truly,
like, yeah, right? I mean, sorry, like we've got a million bartenders and fire people and whatever. Anyway, introducing an astronaut. it's a fake relationship book. They are living together, pretending to be in a relationship for 3 months, and then he has to go on a mission to space because that is what astronauts do. Yes. And like I said, I've been hearing such great things about it. I am not always a fake relationship person, but I do enjoy, I really like kind of the intimacy of a fake relationship where there are just like two people and you are the only person who knows the secret, right? Like you're just in on it together. Like there's sort of a forced intimacy to that I tend to find pretty compelling. So like I said, I haven't started it yet, but it's next on my list because of all of the hype. Jess and I recently talked about books that were worth the hype. I will let you know whether or not this one is.
Excellent.
All right. Before we take a quick break, I have a question for you, Vanessa. Are you looking to elevate your reading life?
Forever and always.
Because Tailored Book Recommendations is here to help with hand-picked recommendations. As the managing editor of Book Riot, know, but some of you listening may not. You can tell the bibliologists at Tailored Book Recommendations about what you love and what you don't. You can get your recommendations via email or receive hardcovers or, and this is the one we always hit for romance readers, you can now also get paperbacks in the mail. It just opens up a whole new world to you as a romance reader. You've got a quarterly plan or annual plan available. So TBR has something for every budget. Plans start at just $18. You can visit mytbr.co to subscribe today. It only takes a few minutes. Go get those romance paperbacks or whatever else. Maybe you feel like you have enough romance recs from us on When in Romance, so you want to do something else. That's your option. TBR is great. So go visit mytbr.co. Okay, we're going to talk to Vanessa about a lot of different reading things and a lot of different romance things, book related. We're not going to pry into your personal life, Vanessa. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break.
Today's episode is brought to you by Mobius, part of Hachette Book Group. I have for you a swashbuckling fantasy that is full of demons, possible gods, ghosts, and an ornery mule. So Essevar Boros is one of the legendary sword-fighting magistrates known as the Greatcoats and the king's personal investigator of the supernatural, and he is no stranger to tales of ghosts and demons. So when the fractious monks of the abbey, rumored to be the birthplace of the gods, begin warring over claims of a new pantheon arising, the frantic abbot summons him to settle the dispute. Armed only with his famed investigative talents, his faltering skill with a blade, and imperious, his ornery mule. In the words of Donkey from Shrek, though, he's a noble steed, okay? Armed with all those things, Estevar must root out the source of the madness lurking inside the once sacred walls of Isola Sombra before its chaos spreads to the country he's sworn to protect. Pick up Crucible of Chaos by Sebastian de Castile for all of the wonderful things I just described to you. I mean, it sounds like a good time. And thanks again to Mobius, part of Hachette Book Group, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Steve Aoki's HeroQuest at your local bookstore or online at HeroQuest.com, and catch Steve live on the Heavenly Hell Tour. HeroQuest is a graphic novel that is the story of a genetically augmented metahuman named Hero who travels into the multiverse 400 years into the future to save Earth from a disaster it cannot avoid. It has everything from mutants to robots to zombies to aliens, witches, and more. It's a quest for 10 rings of tremendous power from 10 different worlds that will be needed to save our world from certain disaster. It's an epic journey that will require the hero named Hero to be cursed to save the lives of billions on Earth. It's a story of heroism, wonder, betrayal, and finally, revelation. This is the hero's journey. This is Hero's quest. So the story was imagined by the mind of Steve Aoki and written by New York Times bestselling author Jim Kruger and Steve Aoki. So make sure to check it out. And this episode comes thanks again to Steve Aoki's HeroQuest at your local bookstore or online at HeroQuest.com, and catch Steve live on the Heavenly Hell Tour.
All right. So Vanessa, like you said, you have actually been on When in Romance before, but not with me. So correct. I don't know how much you all talked about your life as a romance reader, but one of the things that we like to do when we have someone from the sort of bookish world to talk with who isn't necessarily mainly a romance reader or exclusively a romance reader is kind of just to sort of get their vibe and get their sense and get their romance origin story. Do you have a romance origin story?
I do. And this is going to sound so canned or like pre-discussed, but it wasn't. And Trisha does know this actually in her core, she remembers. But quite literally, it was this show that really turned me into a romance reader. Like I've, you know, been a romance or a reader, I should say, all my life, et cetera, you know, fill in the blank. But due to reasons of, you know, everything romance readers have already heard before, whether it's patriarchy and sexism, et cetera, I was not like really surrounded by examples in my life of people who read romance. And the ones that did, I mean, again, you've heard this story before.
Mm-hmm.
And through doing much more work with Book Riot, I was obviously getting, you know, I was a fan of Book Riot before I ever became like a, you know, a writer for the site and then eventually staff. And One in Romance was one of the podcasts that was literally, I think, getting off the ground more or less around the time I started writing for Book Riot. Mm-hmm. So I was seeing like the brainstorm for coming up with the name. And it was just like, oh, these seem like really cool people. Started listening to the show. And then literally from the very first episode, I was like, why aren't I reading more romance? Like, I know I, you know, read books with romantic subplots, et cetera, but yeah, I just really wasn't a person that was reading capital R romance. So through, yeah, the show just started, I think it was probably a Sarah McLean romance that was one of the first, maybe an Alyssa Cole. But as Trisha knows, I quickly became an evangelist for several of the books you've heard Trisha talk about a lot on this show, from Sonali Dave or... oh my gosh, who's my other fave? Diana Biller.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was definitely the show that really like kind of finally just banged the gavel and like, this is a thing you should be doing more of. And yeah, ever since, it's been a great ride.
It is. And it, I don't know if this was your experience, but like once I finally discovered romance, I talked about this a little bit when Jess and I were on with Jeff talking on the Book Riot podcast.
Oh, yes,
that was
romance. A good episode.
Well, thank you. But I mentioned like, I was so mad, Vanessa. I was like,
same, extremely same.
I was like, I don't know. I was maybe, I don't think I was 30, but I was close. And I was like, how is this? How people have been keeping this from me for years. I was so angry.
I think it was around the same-ish age, maybe like maybe a little. It may not have even been later, to be honest. Like not that much later, but like, yeah. And it was the same, just like, okay, cool. Like the, I've just been missing out on this whole awesome range of literature that has so much for like just about any. Yeah, I definitely came to that same realization. And it's so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if this is true because I'm heavy into romance. I do read graphic novels. I read nonfiction. Like I read a fair amount of different things, but I'm deeper in romance than I am anywhere else. So I don't know if this is true of other genres, but I think by and large, with some major and very problematic exceptions, the romance reader community tends to be pretty welcoming, right? Like they tend to be absolutely. Like, oh, we're so happy you're here. Like I said, there's
100%
major other inclusion and discrimination issues in romance. But like, yes. For readers, they're always like, oh, don't worry. Like you may be late to the party, but let me give you 15,000 backlist books that you can read now that you've arrived.
100%. That has absolutely been my experience. I am a pretty wide reader for reasons that we'll also discuss, having to do a lot with my job. I have to kind of read a lot of, you know, around the way. But there, I mean, all genres to some degree are, you know, victim to this, but there are definitely some that feel very gatekeepy when you start to describe, you know, that you're into it. There's folks who will tell you you're not reading the right kinds of books or not taking the right kinds of books seriously. And romance, with all the caveats you just gave, was very much people being like, welcome, the water is warm. Come on in. And it was great. And I have more recommendations just from reaching out, I think, to you and like Jen Northington in the beginning of my like discovering. I had a list back then that I could still be reading today. I mean, and I've been reading a lot since then, but that was just a few years ago.
It's
been great.
You'll get there. You'll get through the whole TBR. I know. do you have like favorite types of romance, like favorite subgenre? It sounds like maybe you're at least somewhat of a historical reader.
Yeah, definitely. I know I've noticed these days that I will reach for anything that just sounds like a good story, you know, if, especially if it's got like really a diverse set of characters, whatever marginalization that is. I'm just really interested always in those kinds of stories. But the things I've noticed I do gravitate towards are absolutely like historicals, and specifically one where the woman has kind of carved out a way to get some agency in a world that, you know, traditionally wouldn't have given it to her. Diana Biller. And definitely ones with really express consent have been really great. Just, and I know that that is, you know, somewhat of a relatively, that was a good use of words, a relatively new ish, you know, thing that we've been focusing on. But I definitely, if it's kind of loudly a part of the story from, you know, the publisher copy, I will grab it. And the only thing I really don't reach for, and it's hard to even like know that this is the case without someone telling you, is when the third act feels forced.
Sure.
Like, we really needed to put the breakup in here, and so we're going to disagree about, you know, pie.
Yes.
But other than that, I definitely, I don't know, I've noticed that I don't seem to be reaching for a specific trope these days. I was into like enemies, rivals to lovers for a really long time there. And now it's kind of just like, tell me about these characters. What's their like deep, dark story? And that's mm-hmm. really all it'll take to hook me.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that you are not, that it's when a third act is forced, it is kind of an issue for you. I think that's true of a lot of people when a conflict feels forced too.
Yes.
And one of the things that we've talked about on the show a little bit is that oftentimes that is why people sometimes prefer like a historical romance or
yeah.
basically prefer anything other than contemporary, because yep. in so many contemporary romances, the conflict or the third act or the dark moment or whatever is again about like, wait a minute, I thought you were a cake person.
Yeah,
exactly. Pie person.
Because there's all the like barriers to communication or what have you, yeah. like are no longer there, right? Like now yeah. I can just call you on my iPhone and I don't need to like ride my horse and buggy to get to you or whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. Or like I don't have to be like arranged marriage to you,
yes,
because it's
exactly.
2024, right? Like
yep.
it's a whole thing. Okay, let me ask you, this has been a topic of much discussion between Jess and myself. Are there tenses, points of view, like is there form of a romance or any book that you can't read? It comes up because I cannot read third person present tense books.
I know you
can. I can do first person present, third person present. It breaks my brain in a way that I just cannot handle. It feels like I'm looking over someone's shoulder in like a creepy way.
Yes.
Anyway, but that's cool. It works for some people. How about you?
Yeah, that's literally my one. And I'm not saying that to, you know, please you. It's literally, in particular, if the book is steamy.
Yeah.
There is something about getting it from the that yes. I'm like, this is weird. And again, yeah. That is not to shame anybody for whom it does work. It's just my brain does not seem to. I'm not like into the story in the same way because it feels, yeah, sort of like a creepy.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay. This is cool.
It feels like kind of voyeuristic, right? Like
yes,
to me,
that's
like
the word.
If it's third person past, then it's like someone is telling you a story. Like mm-hmm. Vanessa did this and Trisha did this yeah. and blah, blah, blah. Where it's when it's present,
yeah.
it's like Vanessa is doing this and Trisha
yes.
is doing them. Like, how do you know?
How do you know?
And I think the reason that first person present works better for me is that it's like it could be somebody
it's
telling
like
me what they're doing. Yes,
yeah.
exactly. That's exactly it.
They've consented to tell me the story.
Yes, exactly.
It's
but
so funny.
Anyway, so it is good to know. Okay, great. So here's the other question Jess and I disagree about. Are you a rereader?
So I am a rereader in my heart. So again, I keep saying we're going to get to this, but we are quite literally in one of like the next questions I know Trisha has up. But because of like how my work now functions, it is mm-hmm. a lot harder to find time to even just read sometimes stuff that is not tied to a specific date.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, so yeah, a lot of my reading is, I don't want to say monopolized, but definitely kind of, you know, structured by the work that I have to do for various commitments. So if I have to, this is maybe dark, but I have to be in a really low place.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately I have found those corners of
yeah.
life in the last several years, you know, one or two times where I need to reach for something that is reliably going to put me in a good place. And it's usually mm-hmm. something that I haven't read in some time that I know will like hit that spot. I have absolutely read, you know, The Widow of Roundhouse a few times,
yep. mm-hmm.
specifically for this reason. So like, am I technically? Yes. Was I a much bigger rereader prior to becoming an editor for a book media site? Yes. But as of now, it is really hard to find the time to do it.
So let's actually get to that question of like how romance fits into your larger bookish life in your job. And if you can talk a little bit about, like, it may not be super obvious to people why, what you would need to read, because you're in a management
yeah.
job and you're in a project management job, but it's bookish, but you know, like how, what is it that you kind of have to make sure you make time for?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, this is maybe not new for your listeners, or maybe it is, but, you know, bookish careers, I think there is still some misconception out there that like, if you work in books, whether that's because you're a librarian or, you know, you work in book media, that's like, oh, you get paid to read. Yeah. There is a lot of reading to be had, but the reading, as far as like when it happens, why it happens, etc., is not like, I promise you, I do not sit at my desk and just like sit here and read unless it's like a spare 15 minute thing. Mm-hmm. So the reason that my reading is shaped by my job is due to a combination of factors. Like, one, I am a co-host on All the Books, which is one of our flagship podcasts that goes out, you know, every Tuesday. We're in Liberty Hardy, who is like the main host, and then a rotating cast of co-hosts come on and talk about four books that have come out on or around a given Tuesday, you know, new book release day. We used to read all four of our picks for the show. And, you know, for all of our voracious Veloci readers out there, like, maybe that doesn't sound like a lot, mm-hmm. but if you are a person, and there is no right or wrong answer to like how you do, how you shape your life. But like, if you are a person who does do stuff besides read, like if you go, you know, have any semblance of a social life, et cetera, that plus a 40 hour a week job is really hard to do, because it essentially means that you're always reading specifically for books that come out on a specific day on the month. So you better just hope that that week has something you're interested in. And then if you are a person like we are, where you also care about diversity and inclusion, and you want to make sure the books right. you're recommending, you know, are inclusive of the other identities, it can be difficult. So we actually changed the structure of the podcast to where we only commit to reading two, and then we talk about two that we're excited about. But that still means that a really big chunk of my reading is yeah. about like, hey, books that came out this week, so I can tell people about them.
And I think that's the thing that people maybe don't quite get, right, is yeah. that it's not just somebody saying, hey, listen, over the course of this month, you need to read four books, because a lot of people will be like, yeah, no problem. I do that anyway.
Sure.
But it's four books that meet these very specific parameters. Mm-hmm. And if you start one that you think is going to be great and you get like
and then it's not
halfway
great.
Through. Yeah, that's that's tough. Then you're tacking yeah. another, like you're hoping for the best in a lot of ways.
This happens actually a lot. And it's, you know, this has also been a thing that we've tried to discuss on the podcast is that deciding what to then talk about or not talk about is a kind of delicate balance and like personal choice, because sometimes yeah. a book is great for thee and not for me. And maybe I still talk about it because even though it's yeah. maybe not my bag, it still is yours. You mm-hmm. know, I firmly believe that our lives are often enriched by 3-star reads. So
yeah,
it doesn't need to shake my soul, but I can still tell you about it. And then sometimes yeah. the book really doesn't feel like something I want to recommend. So yeah. deciding what that is means that you're basically just reading and like hoping for the best and reading with enough advanced notice or like the time that you can shift. But like, I'll be the first one to tell you that there's times when I've been down to the wire, you know, recording in 2 days and realize I really don't like this book yeah. that I'm reading because mm-hmm. something really it, like that, like breaks my rules, you know, that it's something that I just don't want to recommend because it's problematic, et cetera. So then now what do I do? Like, I'm not yeah. Liberty. I can't read a book. Not always anyway, right. in that time.
Yeah.
So between this, that podcast and then doing other stuff, you know, I'm also on the All the Backlist show, which is one that sounds a lot easier to do because it does open us up to just, hey, talk about two backlist picks. But again, I'm on a podcast that where most of my reading is new books. Right. So I'm kind of just waiting for those books to be backlist. Like, I'll stalk that author and be like, oh, they put a new book out. I can talk about the old one, you know, and sometimes yeah. it's kind of soon, and then do write, you know, and edit other content for the site where I'm having to talk about books. So like, on top of the fact that I am reading for this show where new releases are really important, I do still have to, and because I want to, frankly,
right,
fit in books that are backlist, both for my own pleasure and because it is useful to me to then be able to talk about other books in other places, you know, our deep dive newsletter or like mm-hmm. guesting on a podcast, you know, et cetera. So
yeah.
It's work to make sure that you still can do this work and still enjoy the thing. And it's something I'm pretty insistent on because I don't want to get to a point where I'm like, I don't like this anymore.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah. This thing that has been such a core of my existence for my entire yes, life is now a thing I hate. Yes. It's interesting to talk about books and making decisions about whether to yeah. recommend a book or, you know, because I think one of the things that is true of Book Riot and is true of a lot of places is that we are not a review site, right?
Correct.
We talk about books that we're excited about. We don't, it seems to me, and obviously you would know better than I do, it seems to me that as a site, Book Riot does not do a lot of posting about books that people do not like.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of baked into our fabric. We really don't like to punch down. Like, we would rather just mm-hmm. tell you about good, but not tell you about bad.
Yeah. And I think that's a really interesting, I think this discussion of kind of what do you recommend? How do you recommend it? Who do you recommend it to is so interesting because so many readers are different and have like a different perspective. Like a friend of the show, Sarah Wendell of Smart Bitches Trashy Smart, Books always says like, just because like there's something for everyone, like a thing that is a 1-star read for you might be a 5-star read for me.
Yeah.
And so I think I'm sure that many people listening to this podcast have had the experience of Jess or I being really excited about a book and them picking it up and being like, oh, you know what? This is not for me.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really interesting, you know, I think one of the main things that keeps me from recommending a book is if I feel like I can't stand behind it in terms of the way that it is sort of representing people and characters. There is a we're starting to get more and more romance about characters over the age of 35 and even at this point 40. Thank you, Kathy Yardley.
Yes, thank you.
But that wasn't the case for a long time. And so when we would do recommendation shows, we would get requests from people being like, "Listen, I'm 45. I would love to read about a character who's not 28." And there is a very popular, very prolific writer who writes actually a fair number of older couples, but who writes them in a way that I am frankly not comfortable with. And so it's, you know, it's a tough decision to make because I can see that this person is looking for representation about themselves, but I don't feel comfortable recommending certain books by certain people. It's a really interesting kind of thought experiment to kind of figure out what you're talking about, who you're talking about, and why.
I keep going back to this phrase that I think I've already said on the show once, which is like, is it, you know, good for thee and not for me? Because books are just so subjective, and being a person who manages or at least touches a lot of our social media presence, I can tell you, you know, how quickly people are to come and jump and tell you that like the thing you recommended is not for them, which is totally fine. And so it's hard not to let those voices, I think, be in our heads when we are deciding to recommend a book, to the point where I think, honestly, I've gotten a lot more candid on the podcast about saying, look, these are some things that if this is not your bag, you may not like this for this reason.
Yep.
And even that felt hard because it felt like I was ultimately giving like a con for the book. And again, unless somebody is violating what I think to be like, yeah, like bad treatment of people, it's problematic content in some way, I tend not to want to punch down on the person because it wasn't that they did something wrong. It just maybe isn't the fit for, you know, me, Vanessa Diaz, but it might be something that's really perfect for someone else. Like, how do you do that while also just naming the fact that, hey, there's bits of this that for X reasons, if you're not into, you're not going to enjoy it, but I'm not saying it's not good. I'm just saying it's not maybe your particular bag of chips.
Yeah.
So,
That was a little bit of a tangent that I didn't warn you about. So thank you for exploring it with me. Can you talk a little bit about how you find your romance reads? Before we're going to actually, you're going to give us some titles in a little while. But before we do that, can you talk about is it easier as someone working for a book media site? Do you find stuff or is it overwhelming because you get like hundreds of titles thrown your way?
It's a little bit of both, actually. So my inbox died on July 2019 when I became managing editor, which is like a first world problem, I suppose. But yeah, I do get a whole lot of publicity stuff in my email that I do still try to like at least give a glance to, you know, see if there's something that I'm not aware of. Because I'm on these shows that talk about books, I live in something called Edelweiss that book people will know about, but I'm constantly just looking for new releases. But frankly, if I just stopped doing all of that today, like if I stopped reading my inbox and never once checked Edelweiss, because I edit and touch all of this content for the site, the recommendations just come organically to the point where like at one point I believe I saw it as overwhelming because I was in the early days kind of writing down every topic that sounded or every book that sounded interesting. But between the fact that I do touch in some way, if not directly, if not at the end for like quality check reasons, most of our podcasts, our newsletters, and our site content, that list got nasty really fast. Where it's like, there's no freaking way I'm ever going to be able to do this. So now a lot of it is just sort of letting it be a part of my consciousness, you know, through touching all of these different pieces. You'll often obviously see repeats because, you know, more than one person is going to be excited about a book, and really only start to jot the ones down that either ring my particular plot or, you know, trope bells. So if it's got anything like mythological, if it's historical, if it's got witches, like if it's like Latine, if it's got the name Alexis Hall attached, like I'm probably going to like write those things down. And then other than that, kind of just maybe organically, I don't know, absorb it through osmosis, because I just, yeah, encounter too much of it on a daily basis to like try to track it in any more logical way than that.
Yeah, I think that sounds right to me too. I think, So Jess actually normally handles our inbox, and she has been on vacation. So
yeah, that's right.
I took a quick look at it before I, you know, called into this, and I was like, oh,
Homer
no.
in the bushes.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I thought we got like 5 or 6 emails a day. Apparently we get like 30. So shout out to Jess for cleaning out our inbox on a regular basis.
Yes.
It's wild. But I think it's, I have a similar sort of experience where Silvana Reyes, who also writes for the site, will occasionally tweet about something, and I will be like, okay, she's hooked me. Like, she has this sort of extraordinary ability to write about a thing with such enthusiasm and love.
So much enthusiasm.
That, like, and I will be honest with you, like 25% of the time I get into it, I'm like, you know what? This one's actually not for me. But it's good to know that Sil really loved it. She was so excited. All right. We're actually going to talk about some books. But before we do, let's take another quick break.
Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo. This is one I'm actually super excited about. I liked Leigh Bardugo's other adult fantasy books, and so I'm really looking forward to this one. It's set in the Spanish Golden Age during a time of high stakes political intrigue and glittering wealth. It follows Luzia, a servant in the household of an impoverished Spanish nobleman who reveals a talent for little miracles. Her social climbing mistress demands Luzia use her gifts to win over Madrid's most powerful players, but what begins as simple amusement takes a dangerous turn. Luzia will need to use every bit of her wit and will to survive, even the help of Guillén Santángel, an immortal familiar whose own secrets could prove deadly for them both. So The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo is on sale now. And like I said, it's a must-read of the season. It's perfect for anyone who loves history, a little bit of magic, a lot of danger. You can get your copy now at leighbardugothefamiliar.com. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Amazon Publishing. Let me ask you a question. How well do you think you know people? And how well do you think they know you? 6 award-winning, best-selling authors of suspense explore the lingering threat of secrets and the inescapable fear that they can't stay buried forever. So no matter how dark the hiding place, the consequences of revealing the truth can bring out the worst in lovers, friends, family, and strangers. And check this out. You can read and listen to all 6 short stories in the Nevertell collection free with Prime. You can learn more at amazon.com/nevertell. And these best-selling authors include Liv Constantine, Laureth Ann White, Andrea Bartz, Rachel Halsell Hall, Avi Pachota, and Carolyn Kepnes. Again, you can read and listen to all 6 short stories free with Prime and also Kindle Unlimited. So make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Amazon Publishing for sponsoring this episode.
All right. Now for the moment we've all been waiting for.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which is when we talk a little bit about some actual titles. I'm going to sneak some in too because I can't help myself. But Vanessa, what kinds of romances would you like to talk about and recommend for people who are listening today?
I'm so excited. So I'm going to also really quickly give the caveat that the document that Trisha and I were working out of was not editable realize I didn't have access. No, totally fine. But by the time I looked at it and then filled my answers in on my own separate sheet, I realized that we both have an author in common. But you know what? That's fine. Because
it's totally fine.
And I kind of already said it. It's Alexis Hall, who I want to just, I think, recommend in general. Mm-hmm. Alexis Hall doesn't just write romance, writes obviously another, I love Iron and Velvet, which is the most like wackadoo vampire fantasy. But I absolutely started reading his romance books because of this podcast. And I will let Trisha recommend the title she's going to recommend because I also just read that and loved it. But I am an evangelist for the London Calling series. It starts with boyfriend material. And if you are an audiobook person, like chef's kiss to this particular series. If I find a person on the street who sounds like the voice of Oliver in these series, like that's a wrap. Like, I don't need to know anything else.
It's just over.
Like, do you want to forge a life with me? But yeah, the Boyfriend Material series is, we all have heard them talk about it on the show too, but like the kind of bouncing through life, not successfully, child of like former rock stars, has to be in a fake relationship with a very uptight barrister, and they are like figuring out their relationship. And it does such great explorations of what it means to forge your own queer identity and not necessarily have that like match up with external expectations of what it means to be queer and get in a gay relationship specifically. And the like dialogue, man.
Oh man.
Alexis has this on lock. Like, yeah. so funny without being forced, again, which you have heard me say. But yeah, so that is absolutely my like first recommendation. And do we want to bounce back and forth between the two of us here? And go,
I think
like,
we might as well, because it's organic. Because the first one on my list is 10 Things That Never Happened. Yeah. And before I talk about it, I'm going to tell you that I'm going to ask you the question after I'm done talking about this about whether you have a preference for one point of view or multiple points of view in a book. Because Alexis Hall books that I have read tend to be sole point of view. You're just seeing from one character. And so it's funny that you mentioned the dialogue and how funny his books are, because I was reading 10 Things That Never Happened and sort of came to the realization that we talk a lot about romantic comedies. Alexis Hall, I think, is actually writing sitcoms.
Yes.
So they are romantic and they fit all of the like romance parameters, but like the situations that people get into, like there is
Christmas tree.
It's why, yes, that's actually exactly. So 10 Things That Never Happens takes place around the holidays. It is, I mean, even the premise is so sitcom-y. He is managing essentially like bathroom or Bed Bath & Beyond sort of store. He's not doing a great job of overseeing his staff. So he gets kind of called to the main office. And as he is getting fired, the boss like sort of backs him kind of into a shower. He falls and hits his head. And then so he can pretend that he didn't get fired, he pretends to have amnesia. So he has to stay with his boss for like the 3 weeks leading up to Christmas because he has to pretend he doesn't know if he knows anyone who can help him. Like it's again, the premise itself is just wild, but so he starts to get involved in the boss. I think his name is Jonathan.
I think so.
So yeah, Sam, short for Samwise, is the main character, and Jonathan is his boss. And Sam starts to get involved with Jonathan's family. And there's like, for example, this situation where they are shopping for a Christmas tree and it is way too big. And it's just wild. Like I said, the books are funny and they're lovely and they're romantic and the character building and the romance building is wonderful. But I really think that the secret of Alexis Hall's magic is the way that he just builds and builds and builds the nonsense, kind of like the fun nonsense in all of these people's absolutely. Lives.
Like, what is in Boyfriend Material? Oh my gosh, Luke works for like a nonprofit that's its whole sole purpose is to save this like bug from extinction.
Yeah,
and I cannot for the life of me remember right now, even though we talk about it all the time, but like the acronym for what the thing stands for is something so bonkers.
Is it crap?
I think it might be crap.
Yeah. CRAPP or something. Yeah.
And then the side characters, like his coworker at that, the family in 10 Things That Never Happened. I've never thought about it that way. And you just unlock something in my brain that if somebody were to adapt these, it would be such an excellent like situational comedy because of all the stuff that happens. Yeah. Super.
Absolutely. So have you thought a little bit about this question? Do you have a sole POV or multi-character POV preference?
I was thinking about this the whole time you were talking and then kind of got derailed with my own thoughts. But I've noticed that I'll do both. There are, I mean, this is, I guess, the entire point of dual POV often in romance. But like when the other POV suddenly fills in all these blanks for, you know, things that the character thought, said or did that were, you know, you were previously convinced that they were awful. Mm-hmm. And then that dual POV suddenly, I guess I'm a fan of the dual POV when it's done really smartly. Like if it's just that I now got to hear pretty much the entire thing in another person's perspective, that's not super interesting to me.
Yeah.
But if there's really good, like compelling, kind of like what happens in real life reasons for, you know, we've hopefully anyway, all been in that situation where like you thought you knew something about a person. And the minute you got like the details that were actually going on in their head because of their lived experience, you're like, oh, wow. Yeah. Hadn't considered that. So if it does that part really well, I do love when they suddenly flip to that second POV.
Yeah.
How about you?
I think that it makes a ton of sense. I think I am in the same way in that one of the things that I enjoy about a sole POV is that you're almost experiencing the same kind of vulnerability with the one character who you know, right? Because you can't, when you have both perspectives, you are seeing like, what are you doing? This person's also in love with you. Gosh, stop.
Yeah.
But when you only have theirs, it's a different situation.
True. Super true.
All right. What else you got?
My next is The Switch by Beth O'Leary. I'm going like deep into like the things that, again, I will like go and reread if I'm having like a tough day. I did not even know you were going to ask about rereads, but these are all kind of fit in that camp. I've read lots of Beth O'Leary since, but I just love the setup of The Switch and the fact that we do get an older protagonist switching places with a young one and going from living in the country to living in London. And then the gal that was in London comes to live in the country, and it's maybe a little stereotypical, and then she meets like a guy and the guy has a dog and they bond over the dog and all, you know, all the things. But it was so smartly done. Like, I just had a really great time with that. And I have had a really good time with a lot of other like Beth O'Leary's romances, and just the way that they're a combination of also actually very funny. Like, I would also want to throw in The Road Trip, I think, as like a bonus recommendation here, because that's another one where I remember the dialogue being just banana pants. Mm-hmm. And the setup of having to like be in a car with like your ex on their way to a wedding and all things going wrong that one is another chef's kiss. But yeah, so Beth O'Leary, I guess, in general, but I really love The Switch. If you're wanting something kind of, I wouldn't call it cozy quaint per se, but it's in that vein of getting to see a protagonist that is not in her 20s, but I think maybe 50s or 60s, mm-hmm. getting to kind of explore life and find love and do the dating app thing in a way that, again, did not feel forced or like they're just for the laughs. Like, it seemed like I could actually see that happening to a person of a certain age. So I love that. And then again, The Road Trip, which I threw in kind of ad hoc.
This is
things that happened
helpful.
On that drive are really, really great. So yeah,
I have to say, I think Beth O'Leary is one of the main gaps that I have in my romance reading. This is how I get my recommendations, is listening to you and then picking this book up, because I'm sure it's on my e-reader. I'm sure.
Oh my gosh. If you need a good time, I would almost maybe start with that Road Trip one. Like, okay. There's a thing I want to say that is technically a bit of it's a spoiler that's not even part of the main plot, but it has to do with one of the passengers in the car that I was eating like a chickpea salad and I was listening to it on audio, and one of the chickpeas lodged itself in the back of my throat from how hard I laughed. And for a second there, I thought I was going to fall like dead in my kitchen with the chickpea because I was laughing. So there's my recommendation.
I mean, what a way to go, really.
Yes.
That is okay. So don't read it while eating. Very helpful.
At least
very
not helpful. That part. Yeah.
Yes. It's interesting that you talk about kind of what you're looking for in a book or how you read it. Because I recently read the two novellas that just came out this year from Jackie Lau, The Reluctant Heartthrob. And it actually, the first of the two is The Sitcom Star. I liked The Reluctant Heartthrob better. I thought the sort of conflict and character development and some of the small friction, like not actual tension between the characters, but just kind of the way that they connected to each other worked a little bit better in The Reluctant Heartthrob. But they're set in the same universe where one main character in each book is a sort of famous actor on what is a kind of Schitt's Creek style Canadian sitcom, because Jackie Lau is Canadian and writes her books largely up in Canada. And I enjoyed both of these books a lot. But they are, you kind of have to know what you're getting and what you're going into, right? Because these are novellas. They are relatively short. I found them both very engaging with characters who are incredibly likable and relatable and had very real problems. But there is sort of I don't want to say there's a lack of depth, because I don't really feel like that's quite fair. But there's only so much you can fit in 160 pages versus 450, right? Like, it's just a different kind of story. So for like a quick read between other things, I found both of these books to be really fun and enjoyable. And I think either one of them would be a great like beach book or airplane book or something like that, because they read really quickly. They're super engaging.
Ooh, I need some of that.
Well, allow me to help. And I will say, I think the reason to read The Sitcom Star first is it genuinely is really good. It just was my preferred one was the second one. But The Sitcom Star has the background about the show and the characters and the actors who play them. And so you will have more context if you read both.
That's good to know.
So there you have it. Perfect. All right. You got one more? Two more? However many more?
I'm going to do this. Again, I've already talked plenty about Diana Biller, so I'm not gonna like actually talk about her here, but like you've heard me already, so yeah, Widow of Rose House, and then the two books that came after that are also in the same kind of universe are so much fun. And the one I do want to talk about, though, and I have not read the last book in the series, but the announcement just came through I think this month, so, and that is the Rimas of Power series by Alexis Daria. I didn't realize until the announcement that the series was called Primas of Power, which means cousins of power. But like, I just love that. Like, primas have like a different connotation in Spanish, and I don't know why, but like a lot of, I don't know, it evokes feelings of like cousin, bestie. My best friend in the world is my prima. So I'm super attached to these books. But you've definitely heard Jess and Trish talk about Along Came, what is it? No, sorry. I'm getting those names wrong.
There's A Lot Like Adios.
A Lot Like Adios. And oh my gosh, I'm like completely blanking on the other one, even though I love these books so much.
You keep talking.
So the one
I'll
that's coming out now is Along Came Amor.
Yes.
And I think before that was, oh, You Had Me at Hola. That's the other
that's
one.
That's what it is.
Yes. So yeah, these books are all about Latina women, and the setups of them are just all kind of read a little bit like a telenovela. One of them, I think, actually has a telenovela star. Yes. But in this recent one, it's one of those, this is going to be a fling, but just kidding, it's not, about a woman who is a divorced school teacher, and she meets like a really sexy hotelier, and this like, this is going to be a no fling thing, and then of course runs into him at a wedding, and he's, I think, either a groomsman or like the best man or something.
Sure.
But the way she writes her characters, it's like a rule that I cannot go on a podcast and not talk about representation. But as a, you know, kid who grew up definitely not seeing myself reflected in stories,
yeah,
it's just been so refreshing to finally see somebody getting to do it and to really express the full like breadth and depth of our experience, and that it's not a monolith. And it really does like a different thing with each of these books while there is still that like thread running through. And the cover for this last one, oh, it's so beautiful. Like this beautiful like brown skinned woman with really pretty kinky curls, and I for that alone probably would have picked it up, but the setup sounds great too. So read Alexis Daria if you haven't been. They're just a really good time.
Yeah, it took a little while between books 2 and 3, which we always talk about, like, nobody ever owes us anything, no author owes us anything, but it's always then like a really fun surprise when you're like, oh no, I was afraid she was never gonna write this, and now here we are.
Yep. And it's actually, I think, not coming out until I want to say February of next year, so like we actually have some time.
Yeah,
but you have time then to read the first two, and
there's
then
a backlist.
You'll be set up. Yeah.
And Alexis Daria wrote another series that's set in like a reality dance competition.
Oh my gosh, Take the Lead.
Yes.
Yes. Oh my gosh,
yeah,
I forgot
so
I'll Take the Lead.
There's a whole backlist there. You can totally. And if you need read-alikes, let us know. We'll set you up. I'm actually going to hold my last rec because I haven't quite finished the book yet, and I think I know how it's going to go. But just in the event that something twists, it's a middle grade book, and so I am less sure that we're going to get all of the romance elements that we normally would get in terms of how the ending goes. So I'm going to hold it, finish it, and then I will talk with Jess about it next time around. I think unless there's any other books that you want to toss out there, Vanessa, I think we might be we might have done the damage we can do here today.
I think we did. I mean, if you like left unrestrained, we could, I think both of us have in fact had to counsel ourselves about like, hey, our show went really long this week, so we will keep it to this. But y'all really do such a great job on the show, and I'm not just saying that, but you know, it's like the managing editor coming on the show, but I really do want to pat our own selves on the back for what y'all have done for the romance community on the show. It's very important.
That is incredibly kind. Jess and I have talked many times about how much fun this is and how grateful we are that we get to do it and we get to talk with all of you. So with that said, a huge thanks to our wonderful audio editor, Caitlin Brame. You can find us on email and social media. I will not list out all of Jess's social medias. It's in the show notes. You can find it. But you can also, as you know, Jess also responds to our emails at whenandromance@bookriot.com. Vanessa, are you interested in being found? And if so, where can people find you?
I love this question. Yeah, I am still definitely on Instagram. Tried to get off Twitter. It's always going to be Twitter, but I do still engage on Twitter and occasionally on Blue Sky, all the same handle, which is Buenos Dias SD, where the Dias is spelled like my last name with a Z.
Perfect. Please do rate and review the show. It helps other folks find us. Plus, it makes us look good for our managing editor. so we appreciate that. Thank you so much, Vanessa. This was so much fun. We really, really appreciate you taking the time to join the pod.
Absolutely. Anytime. Love being here.
All right. Thanks to Vanessa. Thanks to all of you. And to quote our wonderful friend, Jess Pride, who will be back next time around, happy reading, everybody.
Bye.